Thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I've brought to the program first-time novelist Kevin Dunn. His chilling book, The Necromancer, just hit bookshelves, and I'm so happy to have him on the program to talk a little bit about it today. Kevin Dunn was born and raised in New York City, where he's lived most of his life. He attended Queens College, where he graduated with a BA in English. During that time, he wrote music reviews for the QC Quad and a number of short stories, plays, and poems, some of which were later published in small literary magazines. After graduation, he worked as a personal fitness trainer, a census taker, computer consultant, and a freelance writer. Kevin currently lives in New York City and works for a financial software company. You can find out more about The Necromancer and Kevin at thenecromancer.com. So welcome to the program this morning, Kevin.
Thank you, Juanita.
So first off, congratulations. This is your first book. It must just feel like an amazing masterpiece has hit the shelves for you.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So you've done some writing in the past, as I mentioned. Why did you decide to take on a full novel at this point?
Well, basically, you know, the short stories, you know, they're fine and everything, but it's probably a little bit more difficult to market a short story than it is a full novel. Mm-hmm. Publishers don't seem to be terribly interested in short story collections unless you've already got a following. And also, I had this idea for the novel when I was doing a research paper in college. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the research paper was about the Salem witch hunts. So, you know, I was so fascinated with that, I started getting ideas for story, and the story just, you know, blew up into a book.
Came from there. How long did this whole book take for you in the writing process and finding a publisher and the whole thing?
It's really a long, convoluted story. Yeah, what happened was I wrote the book actually in 1996. Okay. I finished writing it in about 6 months. I was out of work at the time, so I had plenty of time on my hands. And, you know, I'd sent it around to a couple of publishers, but, you know, back then it was really cumbersome. You had to send this whole manuscript through the mail. Now with email and everything, it's just, you know, it all goes right out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, I sent it out again back in 2005, and it still took some time, but eventually it got out there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it has to be a labor of love, that for sure, that first book, because it's such a learning process, and there's so much that you have to basically overcome to get that out. So congratulations again.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little more about this project that you did in college that really kind of dove you into the Salem witch trials, and I believe that was back in 1692 that all happened. Yeah, tell us about how you came to really knowing and becoming interested in that time.
Well, I believe I wrote the paper for a sociology class, and I was curious about how people could get so crazy with, you know, all this hysteria, you know. And I know that back in Puritan New England, it was a theocracy. So basically, they didn't have any question as to whether or not, you know, there was a devil or whether or not witches existed and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I guess it was easy for them to, you know, to get a little bit crazy and start throwing accusations about. Also, it was, there was a possibility of ergot poisoning, which, you know, I mean, that's only a theory that I came across during my research.
Mm.
And the ergot poisoning is basically, well, ergot itself is a derivative, or actually that's where LSD is derived from.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think that's an interesting aspect, you know, a way to look at what happened during that time, because it was a very secluded type of event that happened. And I actually, before, you know, finding out about your book and some of the research that you did in it and with the whole idea of the ergot poisoning, you know, I had heard that a little bit before. So tell us a little more how that actually could have been the influence and what kind of historical research you were able to do and find regarding that theory?
Well, the ergot poisoning was something, you know, that with the
it grows on wheat. Is that
it grows on rye?
Rye,
actually.
Okay.
Yeah, and with the cold winter, very severe winter followed by a quick thawing season, this fungus actually grows on the rye, and these people may have been ingesting it without realizing it. And what would happen is they would end up getting these hot, prickly feelings all over their body, and they would have hallucinations and things as if they were, you know, tripping on LSD.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd never experienced anything like that before, I'm sure, if this even happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what people writhing in the streets and, you know, having all sorts of wild thoughts flying around in their heads. It's very easy to see where something, you know, like the witch hunts could actually get very chaotic and, you know, people could get very carried away with it.
Mm-hmm. And especially if that underlying need to control the people or greed or whatever may have been motivating, you know, some of the people, I imagine that mixed with an influence of an LSD substance. I mean, that it becomes madness.
Oh, definitely. You know, because there was, you know, from what I read, there were some conflicts amongst neighbors, and it was, you know, there were property disputes, and, you know, one way to acquire somebody's property would be to accuse them of witchcraft and have them thrown in jail.
Right.
You know, so
it's an easy way to get rid of your neighbor.
Yeah, and then I guess they could just, you know, like, change the property boundaries however they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they didn't have anybody to argue with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about the whole influence? And I know this ends up making its way into your book, and it's probably something that you're very interested in as well. The church's sort of hysteria about witchcraft and really how this was probably used to instill fear in people regarding witches, and that being more about controlling this Puritan society. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, obviously if you get somebody scared enough, they'll listen to whoever they can in order to get rid of the fear. And, you know, the church being in a position of authority, you know, this is one way that they could do it. You know, they could just say, well, you know, there are these witches, these evil influences that are about, you know, causing all this mischief. And, you know, the only way you're going to be able to get out of it is by, you know, giving yourself up to God completely and, you know, following the church's, you know, rules and regulations and all that stuff. So, I can see where, you know, they would just basically strong-arm people into, you know, obeying what the church,
mm-hmm.
What the church wanted them to do.
Into submission. Do you know how many people were victims of those events?
Well, hundreds of people were actually thrown in jail, but as a result of the Salem witch hunts themselves, 20 people died. 19 were executed by hanging, and one was crushed to death under rocks.
Mm. Gosh, have you ever been to Salem?
No, actually, I've been to Massachusetts a number of times, but ironically, considering the nature of my book, I never went to Salem.
Haven't got there yet. They must have a museum and all sorts of, you know, things up that reflect that history, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at first I thought it would be, you know, I mean, I really wanted to go as part of my research, but it was holding me up as far as the writing went because I wasn't able to go at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I had spoken to my father about was I told him, hey, I wanted to do that, but he said, well, you've never been to, you know, the 17th century before either. You know,
yeah,
it's a
good point.
Novel of, it's a work of fiction. So mm-hmm. I could basically fabricate whatever I wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's get to your book. Tell us about The Necromancer and what is, I know people are, some people will be wondering what The Necromancer actually, what this means, what this word means. So define Necromancer and then tell us what happens in your book.
Okay. A Necromancer is somebody who summons the dead to learn about the future or learn about anything. They basically, you know, ask the people that they rise from the dead to answer questions for them. In my book, what actually happens is a little bit more disturbing.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is a dark book, Kevin.
It is. It was heavily influenced by the writings of Stephen King, Clive Barker, and all of those guys, and especially Clive Barker, because he was very, very bloody in a lot of his stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of fun writing it, and I was wondering if one of the reasons I was having trouble with it in the beginning was because no one wanted to touch it because it was a little bit too much, but after having gone to a horror convention recently, I realized that maybe it's not, all that horrible after all. Maybe it needs to get bumped up a little bit.
Oh, is that right? Oh my God.
Well, some of the people at these things are a little bit extreme, but, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Well, maybe you can keep that in your thoughts for book two if you do decide to do a sequel.
I've considered it. It depends. I guess I have to see how this goes,
mm-hmm.
but I do have ideas for potentially four or five more books as a part of a series.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, I definitely want to find out more about that, but let's talk about the Necromancer. I want to know about your characters and what is happening, what is in this dark story.
Okay. Basically, it starts off with some dramatizations of actual events, mainly how the witch hunts began with these girls who started having fits and started accusing people of being witches and causing all this mischief. And then I really focus more on the story of Susanna Harrington and the Reverend Ambrose Blaine, who you find out isn't quite as holy as you might think he is.
Not quite.
And so it really focuses more on the story of those two,
mm-hmm.
and I really don't delve too much into the trials. I feel like that's really been done to death.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to keep the plot moving very quickly. I figured that the trials themselves would probably slow it down a bit.
Mm, so that's more of a background type of thing. So your setting is not a real town. It's a fictional town called Angelwood.
Angelwood is a fictional. Well, it's not the main focus of the story, but it's a town that I created. For that will reappear in later works, but. I just really created it out of necessity for the story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell us about Susanna Harrington. She's this young, innocent woman from, is she from Salem?
Yes.
Okay. So tell us about her and who she is and her importance to this story.
Her family is undergoing a lot of hardship. Basically have a lot of illness in the family. Her mother and her sister are stricken with smallpox. I don't want to give the plot away, but
mm-hmm.
Basically she's having a really hard time at home with all of this suffering that's going on. And then she actually gets accused of witchcraft herself. And that's when she meets Reverend Ambrose Blaine, and that's when their whole, I guess you'd say it's a interaction
mm-hmm.
occurs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Reverend Blaine, who is a minister that obviously has a dark side, I've read that you really wanted to explore with his character the whole idea of duality in human nature. And
mm-hmm.
I'd like to hear your thoughts on that and your interest with this duality. And maybe if you can allude without giving too much away how his character reflects that.
Well, he doesn't start off all that bad. The reason he gets to the point in his life where he is, this dark character, is really because of his love for this woman who died a long time ago. And so I'm trying not to, you know, give away too much.
I understand.
Yeah, so
sounds like a Dracula theme, like from Dracula.
Right. Well, yeah, actually Dracula was a heavy influence on the book as well. I sprinkled it with journal entries like Dracula was. And that's actually, you know, I wanted to name the book after the Nemesis, you know, but it just didn't sound right. It didn't click with me. So I ended up, you know, using Necromancer, especially since there was an act of necromancy within the story itself. I thought it would be pretty cool to put that in there.
Mm-hmm. It holds a darker note as well. That's just the word necromancer, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, I think most people know that necro means death. They don't know what mancer means, like, you know, the suffix of that word, but
mm-hmm.
When most people don't anyway, which actually refers to divination. Divination is any form of magic that, you know, tries to look into the future or determine certain events.
Oh, is that right? That's interesting.
Mm.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, unfortunately, some people think, well, necromancy, so you want to have sex with dead people.
Yeah, right. that's a different word altogether. So you obviously, Kevin, have a great interest in the occult, and I'm sure this goes back a long ways in your life. So please tell us about your interest in the occult and the supernatural, where it started, how it looks today, if that translates into music or books you read or other endeavors.
Well, it all started really when I was in high school. I took a class called Death and Dying, and it's one of those classes that all the kids want to take because they think it sounds so cool, but it actually was very depressing. And yeah, I mean, we were going over all sorts of things like nuclear war and stuff like that. And we had a field trip up to Connecticut for to see a nuclear submarine base.
Wow.
And one of our at-home projects was to watch The Day After, which is about a worldwide nuclear holocaust.
That sounds so dark. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so I started questioning a lot of things, like the existence of God and why are we here and all of that kind of stuff. And when you start asking questions like that, it takes you in strange places.
Mm-hmm.
So
what strange places?
Well, I started reading books on the occult, books by like Anton LaVey and Aleister Crowley, and
mm-hmm.
I actually, started performing certain kinds of experiments,
mm-hmm.
but that didn't involve any kind of human or animal sacrifice.
Okay, good to hear. Let's get that out.
No, okay. mostly I was interested in astral projection, which actually is something that takes place within the book itself too.
Oh, fascinating. Okay, I see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, like they, Susanna and Ambrose, they end up leaving their bodies at some point during the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that's derived from what I read about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so interesting. What about music?
Music too, yeah. I mean, back in high school, I was listening to all sorts of stuff like, Merciful Fate and Black Sabbath and stuff like that. And those were actually influences on the story as well.
Okay.
Merciful Fate, they had a song called Melissa about a magician whose wife was killed by a priest, and the priest, that the magician actually throws a curse on the priest to kill her in revenge. And I kind of got an idea for the book from that too. So like a lot of different little tidbits. I mean, there's so many different influences in this one book.
Mm-hmm.
I probably couldn't enumerate all of them.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. So do you find that, you were exploring the idea of God and death and that sort of thing. Do you see these influences as dark influences? I'm sure some listeners and people would think that maybe that's too dark, that there wasn't much positivity in those things. But you know, I don't necessarily say that I would agree with that, but what are your thoughts on maybe the darker nature of all of what you were researching or interested in?
Well, everybody has a dark side and a light side. They vary by degrees, but everybody has them. And to deny them is to repress them. That's probably not a healthy thing to do. And also, exploring this kind of stuff, really all I was looking for is the truth. I really don't think I found any truth, but, I'm a lot more open-minded about things than some other people might be.
The search for truth is a very, very interesting journey.
And it could be very scary for people that aren't ready for it.
True, true.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their book to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Kevin Dunn, author of The Necromancer. You can find out more about Kevin through his website, thenecromancer.com. So did you ever try astral projection?
I did, but I didn't really get very good results with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of strange. I'd read a number of books about it, and it felt like there was, like, my body was extending beyond itself. Like, I could feel my body like sinking into the bed, or my fingers like going beyond my body, that kind of thing. But
mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to say whether or not that was a projection of my mind, or whether it was really happening or not.
Mm-hmm. Sure, that's always the question, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you could even really determine. You could say, oh, I left my body. Like, yeah, you were dreaming.
Yeah, right. Right. So what is interesting you today in the whole realm of the occult and the supernatural?
I'm basically an agnostic at this point. I have, like, being on the fence about so many issues, I'm not really a big subscriber to the occult or to religion. I just think that you should try to live the best life you can and not hurt anybody in the process. It's probably about the only way I can live right now. I can't, unless like God came down from the sky and I was like, oh wow. but I really, I don't think that's going to happen.
Probably not. But you never know. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the themes in this book is sort of centered around injustice, and I know that this is something that you particularly feel passionate about. So why in injustice, and why do you feel so strongly about that?
Well, I mean, you just see so many people working so hard to make a decent life for themselves nowadays. A lot of people are struggling, and even with like this recession, whether they say we have one or not, a lot of people are very, you know, unhappy with, you know, their current state of affairs. So,
sure.
I mean, it's that it's like you don't want to see people struggling, and everybody has a hard time, or I should say, most people do. And even myself. I mean, this whole book, you know, this was a real big struggle to get out there. I think the only thing you can really do is, you know, follow your dreams and don't give up.
Yes, there's a lot that kind of stands in the way of a first-time author, most definitely. So with this whole injustice theme and seeing, I like the way that you brought the state of the world the way it is right now, because, you know, we live in a world of such turmoil and such chaos, and a lot of people are very, very unhappy, and there seems to be a lot of injustice happening. So taking some of the themes that you are interested in with darker tones, do you think that there is maybe a dark influence that's happening right now that's influencing what we're seeing?
You mean something supernatural? No.
No. I don't know if about supernatural, but maybe something in, you know, we talk about the duality of human nature and that we all carry darker sides.
Well, you know, I think one of the things is, one of the issues is that people don't have the faith that they used to have. I think a lot of it's got to do with how the church used to really have a strong control over people, and in one sense, some people, or probably most people, needed that, because if they lose their faith, then there's no fear of retribution.
Mm.
People are going to just do whatever they want, and animal natures of people seem to dictate that they're very selfish and will you know, actually do things that aren't very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting take on it. Hmm. So what was, you know, I know this was a hard book to put out. There was struggles that you had to go through. What was the most enjoyable aspect of writing this first novel?
Just watching the characters in the story grow.
Mm.
Even though I had worked from an outline, there came a point in the story where I was a little bit stuck, and I wasn't really sure what was going to happen, and I just kind of plowed through it, and it just started to take on a life of its own. So, and that happens in a lot of the stuff that I write. So, I like that, because I'm writing it and I'm thinking, wow, what's going to happen next?
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm thinking, if I'm wondering what it is, the reader's not going to know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very good point. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, a book like this, from the reviews that I've read, you know, it's very surprising, and there are, you know, very unexpected twists and turns that happen. So you definitely are catching interest with that. So are you writing primarily in horror fiction at this point?
Not really. This book was written 12 years ago.
Right.
So a lot of the stuff I wrote back then was horror, but now it's more like suspense and crime, that kind of thing. It's still dark, but, you know, I only write about things that really scare me.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff doesn't scare me.
Oh,
I mean,
interesting.
I don't have nightmares or anything like that. The things that scare me are things that could really happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, terrorism, you know, epidemics, you know, mass murders, that kind of thing. That's to me, that's a lot more terrifying, because it could really happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. So do you feel that this is just a natural progression in your writing style, or do you feel that you have evolved from the horror genre into a different, like, obviously you're different. This was 12 years ago that you originally wrote this book.
Mm-hmm. In a way, it's a progression. In another way, it's a deviation.
Mm.
It, you know, because it's taking it into a different direction altogether. But I would say I would say that, you know, I still see some horror stuff coming out of me. It's just, I do it more for my own amusement, than out of a desire to, you know, see how scared I can make myself. But if I can scare myself with the horror story, I think a lot of people would be scared because I don't scare easily.
You don't scare. That frightens me to hear. So what do you think about some of the movies that we're seeing on the big screen? Well, I'm not seeing because, I mean, it's just way, way too much for me. But, you know, some of the horror movies that are coming out these days just seem to be incredibly terrifying. Are you a movie fan?
I am. I'm a big, big movie buff. Now, the first movie that comes to mind when you say that is Saw.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, oh, God.
No, I saw the first one, and then I saw the second one, and I'm thinking, that's just like the first one.
Yeah.
I didn't bother to see the other two. The, those movies, I think they're really just shocking. They're more shocking than anything, more of a gross out. And, that might have had its place for the first one, but, you know, the sequels, they don't really interest me. Because there's only so much you can do with a person chained up in a room.
Right.
You know?
True.
I thought the first one was well done, but, I obviously have no aversion to the gross out, but, I think it probably lacked a bit of a plot.
Yeah, most definitely. So what do you think is the appeal? I mean, these movies, you're interested in them. They're huge at the box office. What do you think it is basically the shock that people are looking for?
That they keep coming back?
Yeah, that they keep coming back, and we're just seeing so many. I mean, back in the day, the horror movies that I remember were like Nightmare on Elm Street, and you look at those now, and they're just ridiculous compared to what's coming out now, and it seems to be so cutting edge and so graphic. What is appealing to those people?
I guess it would have to be the shock value and how gross people can, how people can get so grossed out. And, one movie that actually had me retching was, I think it was Hannibal. It was either Hannibal or it was, Red Dragon. I can't remember. It was one of those movies. It was, the scene in particular was when, Anthony Hopkins had everybody down at the dinner table, and he was eating Ray Liotta's brain. that had me retching.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, very, very interesting. So, Kevin, what you'd mentioned that you were working on a new book series right now. What is that? What are you working on?
Right now, I'm working on something. It may become a novel. Originally, it was supposed to be a short story, and it's actually about this guy and his son who are they live in New York City, and they run around and they just do the nastiest things to people.
Jeez, where do you find these people?
Well, I got this idea. I was just thinking, what is the worst thing that people could possibly do? And I'm thinking, I don't know if anybody's actually done this, but I was kind of having some fun with it.
Okay.
And so I started writing it, and I don't know, it just keeps growing. It's got a very Pulp Fiction kind of flavor to it. You know, it seems like I didn't even intend for it to be that way, but it seems to be very much influenced by Pulp Fiction and True Romance, the two Tarantino movies, two of my favorite Tarantino movies, actually.
Which ones were those again?
Pulp Fiction and True Romance.
Oh, True Romance. Okay, I see. So this is a short story series or an actual book series?
No, it's just, actually this is just it's a short story that I've been working on that probably will become a novel because it's already about 16,000 words.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, great. Now, so you're mentioning Tarantino. Now, you really have a wide range of influences and interests, don't you?
Yeah, well, you know, if I like something, you know, I get really into it.
Mm-hmm. So have you found that living in New York City influences you as well? I mean, this is just like the city, the best city on the planet, according to most people. And it's such, there's so many creative people there. Tell us about how New York influences you.
Well, I have a love-hate relationship with New York, and that definitely comes out in anything that I write about it.
Okay.
You know, I end up, you know, writing about homeless people. I seem to be very fascinated with them, you know, how they got to be where they are and, you know, how they live and that kind of thing. But, you know, there's just, you know, to be honest, there's just a lot of inconsideration in this city, and that's where I'm a New Yorker. I was born and raised in New York, and let me tell you, I mean, to say all New Yorkers are rude is, you know, an oversimplification, but mm-hmm. it's not very far off the mark.
You think? Really?
Yeah, well, if people know you or if you're in a crisis, you know, New Yorkers are probably the greatest people to be around because, you know, they just band together. But when they're late for work or something,
yeah,
it's like, forget
look out.
It. Yeah, they're just like, get out of my way, you know. And I actually wrote a short story about it last year called The Secret Life of Walter Miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, he basically just snaps.
Oh, really? Had enough?
He's
kind of like Michael Douglas.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really just snaps. It's very much like Falling Down, that
mm-hmm.
movie with Michael Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, every little thing starts to get on his nerves, and it's really stuff that I just take from my own life, because, you know, you have the people that are like smoking and talking on cell phones while they're waiting on the staircase in the subway.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's this crowd of people just got off the subway, and these people aren't moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, stuff like that, it really annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah, I imagine. I don't understand that either. So I guess writing, in a way, is really a great creative outlet for those kinds of frustrations.
Yeah, it's a way of venting, and it can be very cathartic sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So can that short story be found on one of your websites?
No. Actually, I'm saving that one.
Oh, okay.
I'm probably going to save it for a short story collection.
Oh, great. Great. So tell us about your two different websites.
Well, thenecromancer.com, that's, you know, that's dedicated to the book, of course. And there's a link to kevindunnonline.com, which has short stories, a play, and, you know, some pictures and that kind of stuff up there.
Okay.
So I've got maybe like 5 or 6 short stories up there that people can check out and read. And, you know, some of it's good. Some of it's like, you know, stuff that I did, you know, very early on. I just thought it'd be fun to put it up there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so do you have a blog up there? Do you do frequent entries?
I do have a blog up there. I only just started working on it, so I've only got a few entries. The last one is actually another one of my malcontent stories of New York City.
Uh-huh.
With these subway musicians. It's just, I don't know. I just find it so annoying when people are playing music on the subway and I'm trying to read or listen to music myself.
Have your downtime, yes.
Right.
Very interesting. What are you doing in the near future in the way of book signings or other festivals or anything like that?
Well, I'm going to see if I can get something together here in New York, and then I may end up going out to visit my brother at some point in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll try to arrange for a couple of signings there. I'd also still like to get to Salem. I think that'd be a great place to market my book. And there was a bookstore I was in contact with. They said that the earliest they could get me in is October, which seems to be a really good time.
Halloween month? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yeah, you definitely have to do that.
Right.
That's great. So when was this this horror convention that you went to? Was that in New York?
No, it was in Maryland. It was a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And it wasn't the turnout that I had hoped for, but I met George Romero, the director of Night of the Living Dead and all of those movies, and also a certain influence on my book with the dead people walking around and stuff. So, yeah, it was great meeting him. He's a nice guy, and you know, I gave him a copy of my book and shook his hand, and you know, there's a picture of me with him on my website as well. So, yeah, no, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet that's got to be amazing, as you know, just putting out your first book and to meet one of your influences and someone that's very well known. I mean, that's incredible, really.
Yeah, no, it was awesome.
Well, very cool, Kevin. It's been wonderful having you on the program. We're up early this morning doing this interview in such interesting, dark subject matter, but it's been so great talking with you. Did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to just pass on to listeners before we sign off today?
Just be sure to check out my website, and if the book sounds interesting to you, there are a couple of chapters on the main site that you can read, and if you're really interested, you know, you can order it. You can order it through my website or from Amazon.com or my publisher, Multimedia Publications, and all the links are on the websites.
Great, great. And can this also be ordered through local bookstores?
You should be able to get it through, like, Barnes & Noble, Borders.
Okay.
You'll have to ask them. I don't know if it's in every bookstore, but you can certainly try. And if it's not there, they'll probably order it for you.
Wonderful. And I think you're offering signings on some of the first books. Is that correct?
Yeah, I have some leftovers from the convention. So if anybody wants to order a signed copy from me directly, all the information is on thenecromancer.com.
Okay, great, great. That's a great offer, and I certainly encourage listeners to go to your website and check it out and check out some of your stories. It's a really great, your Kevin Dunn online website's got some really neat information. So thanks again, Kevin, and best to you, and I hope to have you back on the program when you put forth your next book.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. You take care.
You too.
Okay. All right, listeners, there we go. I've been talking with Kevin Dunn. His new book, horror fiction, is called The Necromancer, and you can find it on the web at thenecromancer.com, or once again, Kevin's website, personal website, is kevindunn2nonline.com. So there we go. Oh, Multimedia Publishing, I guess I should mention that as well. And his book can be purchased through their website. So thank you so much for listening to Inside Scoop Live today. I'm Juanita Watson. And until next time.